Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today, Storyworthy celebrates its 8-year anniversary with one of my heroes, Larry King. Larry shares stories about stand-up comedians, baseball, and Donald Trump.
I love stand-up comedy. All the great comics that I've interviewed and spent time with. I love the way comedians think. Baseball is athletic chess. It has no time limit. If I'm going to a baseball game, I don't know when I'll be home. Look, I know Trump a long time. For a long time, Trump was a friend. We had good times together. He was always very nice to me. Went to the Super Bowl with him. Stayed at his hotels. He never charged me. Always nice, and always he was kind of a character. But president?
Today on the show, legendary broadcaster Larry King shares stories about everything from stand-up comedians to baseball to Trump. Stay close.
Happy 8th anniversary, Storyworthy. Wow, 8 years? That's like 50 in podcast years, isn't it? Oh, this is Wendy McClendon Covey, by the way. All right, love you. Bye.
Hey, this is Mike Carano, and I would like to say happy anniversary to Storyworthy. And congratulations on 8 years. It's very groovy.
Hey, Storyworthy. This is Jim Coughlin. Just wanted to wish you a happy 8 years. You know, it feels like only 7.5.
Hi, this is Jennifer Valley, 6-time storyteller on Storyworthy, calling to wish Christine Blackburn and Storyworthy a happy 8th anniversary.
Hey, Christine, it's Kristen Carney, and I'm just calling to wish you a happy 8th anniversary of Storyworthy. Congratulations.
Happy anniversary, Mom. You've been doing Storyworthy 8 out of my 11 years. Will you please come play with me now?
Hi, honey. I cannot believe that 8 years are up. You've done such a wonderful job, and we're all so proud of you. And I love you, sweetheart.
Hi, Christine. It's Hernan from Wondery. I just want to wish Storyworthy and you a happy 8th anniversary and many, many more to come.
Hi, this is Larry King, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. And whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. You guys, today I am so thrilled and so grateful to be sitting here on my 8th anniversary of the podcast, which in podcast years, Larry, that's like a half a century. And I'm sitting here and I'm talking with one of my idols, Larry King, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here with Larry. And if you've been listening to this show over the last 8 years, you have heard me mention this man's name more than 24 times. And I mention it because you are truly someone that I have been watching for years, Larry, and I so appreciate your style.
I could tell, Christine, just from sitting here, that you're bursting with such joy at meeting me. This has been a lifetime wish. So I think we should begin by, let me ask you to please get off my lap and just sit up. Christine, I didn't think this would be
you. Listen,
what it's starting out to be, Christine, and I'm married, Christine, and this is very Christine.
You okay. Have such a beautiful life, Larry. Not only, obviously, are you accomplished, but you know you've had 5 beautiful children. You have a beautiful wife. And when you think about life, sometimes they say there's 3 things. They say there's work, play, and love. I see your love. I see your work. What do you do for play?
I don't call work work. I've been doing this interviewing thing for 61 years. I'm going to be 85 in November. My father died when he was 46 and I was 9. I never thought I'd live this long. I've gotten through a lot of illnesses and beat them, which I'm very thankful for. My spare time is spent reading. I do a lot of reading. I love movies. I love theater. I don't love travel so much. I mean, I go to New York 4 times a year. We do shows in New York. I still go to do my show every day. I love comedy. If I didn't If I hadn't become a broadcaster, which I always wanted to do when I was 5 years old, I wanted to be on the radio. It's the truth. I'd have been a comedian. I love stand-up comedy, all the great comics that I've interviewed and spent time with. I love the way comedians think. I tell you, there's nothing in the world, to me, like telling a joke and coming to the punchline and that moment before the laugh occurs.
Yeah, because you have the power.
When you know you go, oh yeah, you own the stage. You have a lot of power when you're interviewing too, because the good interviewer, it's always in his ballpark. But there's nothing like standing on a bare stage alone. Think of what the stand-up comic does.
Mm-hmm.
Stands on a bare stage, no script, a whole audience. If you're doing drama, you don't know how well you're doing. If you're doing Shakespeare, the audience is quiet. They could be asleep. But if you're doing comedy, people don't fake laughter. I asked Bob Hope once, do you have an edge because you're Bob Hope? When you walk on stage, you're Bob Hope. Do you have an edge over Joe Smith? He says, for about 2 minutes, you better be funny.
It's scary. It's so scary. You know, Mindy Rickles has been on my show and my live show as well. And when people hear, you know, it's Mindy Rickles, Don Rickles' daughter. So there's this expectation. Now, luckily, she delivers because she's super funny. But I can see that setup for her is
tricky.
Her
father was one of my great friends. I spent more time with Don when Don was starting in Miami.
And did you go to his Malibu compound here in Los Angeles?
I did. When I was on the air in Miami when I was 23, and Don was 30, and he was working at Murray Franklin's nightclub in New York, and he would come through the audience and yell at people, and then he came on my radio show. I was doing a radio show at Pumperdick's Restaurant, and Don was not well known outside of Miami. And he would come dressed as a busboy.
Come on.
And he would yell at people as he was coming on the show. He'd pass a lady who was a little overweight. And he would say, you're ordering butter. And he was just... in fact, one story I did. Lenny Bruce was a great friend of mine. And Lenny, of course, was a giant of comedy. I know he cursed a lot and he took on religion a lot. But Lenny, there was only one Lenny. And I had did a show at this Pumperdick's Restaurant in the morning, and Lenny was on with Don Rickles. And Lenny is wearing a prison uniform that he got from Rayford, which is the state prison in Florida. A friend of his smuggled out the uniform. So I said to him, Lenny, why are you wearing a prison uniform? You know, with the number on it and the stripes. And he said, I like to wear this, and I like to go up to cops and ask them information about where is this, how do I get certain place. I said, well, why do you like to do that? He said, because I love the look on their faces. The cop thinks, is this an escaped prisoner asking me for directions? Or is this a brilliant escape prisoner who thinks I won't think he's an escape prisoner, because why would an escape prisoner go up to a cop? So I like to see the things that go through a cop's mind. And Rickles said, Lenny, get a job. Lenny, this is no way to live.
That is really funny. When you did a show in the restaurant, so it was as if it were a club then.
It was a morning show. Pumpernickel's was a very popular restaurant, like Wolfie's, 24-hour restaurant. And their slowest time of the day was mid-morning.
After
breakfast before lunch. So they wanted a show to where people would come and see. And I was getting a pretty big name as a disc jockey. So I do my early morning disc jockey show. Then I go up and do an hour in the restaurant. And it just caught on. Bobby Darin walked in and Jimmy Hoffa.
It's just remarkable.
Ed Sullivan. And that's where I started. So my interviewing started there. We didn't book the guests. I didn't know they were coming. And so I got to like off-the-cuff interviews, not planned. I liked it all off the top of my head. So I got used to that, and I love the give and take. I've been insatiably curious all my... I'm the kind of person you do not want to sit next to on a plane. I drive you nuts, because I'm curious about everything.
But see, I love that about you, because I also am curious about everybody. I want to know why they chose that job.
Yeah, why are they doing
this? Why are they in that field?
I have a motto. I never learned anything when I was talking. Think about that.
That is tremendous.
No, listening audience, you never learn anything when you're talking. So ask short questions, listen to the answer. The answer will always bring you a follow-up. So that's the key to my success. My friend Herbie Cohen, who wrote You Can Negotiate Anything, we grew up together, he's still alive. Herbie says, Larry, the secret of your success is you created a vacuum and you filled it. And you, basically, the secret ingredient is you're stupid. In other words, you don't know. And what you do in all your interviews is, help me.
Yeah.
Why did you do that? Never mean. Why?
Oh, no, you never come off as that. Everybody loves you. I mean,
yeah,
really.
But you get a lot of things when you treat people that way.
But also, you're asking the questions that the audience wants to ask, but they're not there.
Someone asked me, what would you have asked Osama bin Laden? Well, obviously, the first question would not have been, why did you blow up 3,000 people in New York? The first question would have been, probably, you grew up in one of the richest families in Saudi Arabia. Why'd you leave?
Yeah, that's so interesting.
So we'd all think, why would someone leave a rich family to live in a cave?
Because there is a hatred in him. I think there was a hatred.
But they don't think they're bad.
Yeah.
Nobody bad thinks they're bad. Yeah. Hitler didn't comb his hair in the morning and say, I am a terrible person.
Yeah. Trump doesn't probably comb his wig in the morning and think, I'm a terrible person.
Trump does not think but not terrible.
What advice would you give to any journalist living right now in 2018? How do you get to the truth in this environment?
You do the best you can. All you can do is all you can do. You got a lot of facts at your disposal. And there's so much information available that Trump has told already over 3,000 lies printed in the Washington Post. So that you're known.
Do you know any, I mean, obviously you have friends that are Republican, but do you know anybody that would right now stand up for him?
Republican, no.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
I know Trump a long time. For a long time, Trump was a friend. We had good times together. He was always very nice to me. Went to the Super Bowl with him.
Wow.
Stayed at his hotels. He never charged me. I had minor surgery in New York. He took me out to dinner the night before. Always nice, and always he was kind of a character.
Mm-hmm.
He'd come on my show and say, you had the biggest ratings you ever had. But I enjoyed him as a character, and his goal was to get on Page Six. But president?
In the New York Post. What was Page Six, Larry?
It was a gossip page.
I see.
You were as president? No, I can't imagine. So every day I wake up, this is a guy I know 40 years. I can't believe he's president.
Well, it's like nobody can believe it. And to me, it goes all the way back to the fact that, like, he's never done public service. He probably never even volunteered at a school. I mean, he's done
nothing. Five deferments from the Army. He's a big bully. But that's the Donald, and we have to live with this. And Hillary ran a terrible campaign.
Yeah.
And you get what you deserve.
Let me ask you something. Do you think Kathy Griffin crossed the line?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
too bad.
About time you forgive people. When you stand up on a stage, not everything's going to hit, and sometimes you got to show poor taste. But we're, as Trump is, he's a big fan of evangelicals. Evangelicals believe in forgiveness. Why can't you forgive?
No, I definitely do, and I don't like the rap that she's that she got. But I feel like the joke with the big blimp over, you know, London right now of the baby Trump, like that is funnier than what she did.
Well, of course.
You know what I mean?
Of course,
like
it's
what she did was more shock value.
That's what, well, the blimp is obviously an absurd expression of dismay by having him be a blimp hanging over the city.
Yeah, people say that he definitely gets, you know, that gets under his skin when people attack him like that in a personal way.
He's very thin-skinned.
Yeah.
And he attacks back.
Yeah.
That's Donald. Now, I can't say I've always had a good relationship with him. He called me during the campaign all the time.
No kidding.
He knew I was for Hillary, but we talked about things. He asked some advice sometimes.
No kidding.
But since he's elected, I haven't heard from him.
What kind of advice would he ask?
He would ask for things like, do you think I should, what do you think, should I, I'm going to debates. Do you think I should engage these people? But then it was always about him.
Yeah.
I tell how much it's about him. He called me one day. They did an article on me in the Sunday New York Times. It was a very nice article. Big article. And he called me up, he said, and that was a wonderful article I read about you, Larry. I really thought that was wonderful. And I said, Donald, in all the years I know you, this is the first time you have said something to me not about you.
And what did he say?
He said, oh, I wanted to ask you, do you think I should do an interview with that guy?
He's not hearing. That's the narcissistic personality disorder, I'm sure of it.
He's the Donald.
Yeah.
But he's president.
So, listen, I want to touch on a couple more things, including baseball. But first of all, do you like my new glasses?
Yeah, they're very nice.
Aren't they pretty? Yeah, they're from Warby Parker. Have you heard of these guys, Warby Parker? It's what they do is...
Whoopi, it says Warby.
Yeah, it's Warby, exactly. W-A-R-B-Y,
Parker. Why did you say Whoopi? You don't know the name of your own glasses?
They're from Warby Parker. And here's what these guys do, Larry. They cut out the middleman for buying glasses, and they'll send you 5 pair of glasses for free for you to try on. So you can try them on for your wife or your neighbor or the gardener, and they'll tell you what you think, what they think of your glasses, and then you send the glasses back, and then you give Warby Parker your prescription. If you don't have it, they'll even call your doctor and get the prescription, and then they'll send you your glasses back within just a few days. And so for $99.95, you get the glasses, you get the frames, you get the coating. And if people go to warbyparker.com/storyworthy, you can order your favorite pair.
Is it men and women?
It's for men and women. They're able to provide high quality, great looking eyewear at a fraction of the usual price.
Do you know Warby?
I don't know Warby.
Why did you call? Is it her?
I don't know. I don't know where
don't
they
know
came up with
her
the name
or
Warby Parker. That's such a great question,
Larry.
You
said Whoopi.
It's not.
You said Whoopi Parker, and the name is Warby.
WarbyParker.com. Go over there, you guys. WarbyParker.com/storyworthy and order glasses right now. You won't believe
they
how good looking they
glasses.
Are.
They're great glasses. But I would really like, see, my curiosity would tell me one. Is Warby a man or a woman?
Yeah. Or maybe it's two last names.
What kind of name is Warby?
What if it's two last names, like Warby Parker?
So you're curious.
I am.
Call them.
I am curious.
Call this company that you're talking about and ask.
That's a great question. What does it mean, Warby Parker?
Yeah. Who is Warby Parker? Wait a minute. Hold on. Let's invent a story.
Okay.
Okay. This is going to be fascinating.
Okay.
Warby Parker is blind, and his desire all his life has been to see. And one day, a friend of his, Gloppy Wilson, gave him a pair of glasses. He put them on. He saw. He said, Gloppy, what is this? And he said, it's the frames. The frames make the eyes see. And Warby Parker went berserk. And he and Globby got together in a little factory in Mineola, Long Island. And they made their first pair of glasses. And they sold them originally to blind people. And all the blind people saw. And Warby and Glossy got together. And you know what Warby did?
What did he do?
Shut Glossy out of the business. Took over, cut him a slack, and now makes these glasses. Sees 2020 and sells these glasses all over the world. And in one part of the world, this lady named Christine.
That's it.
Calls him Whoopi.
That's it. Let me ask you something.
They're beautiful glasses.
They really are. You have a love of the Brooklyn Dodgers, the same love that my father had. And in fact, I bought my father your book about baseball.
Yeah.
And my father always said, he'd said, you know, I can't tell you what I had for dinner last night, but I'll tell you the starting lineup of the 1955 Brooklyn Dodgers. And you had that in common with him. And baseball has been so much part of your life.
I'll explain that.
Yeah.
Baseball is... it's the best sport ever invented. It's a genius sport. It's genius. Whoever invented it is genius. Why four balls and three strikes? Why? It's just no two fields are the same.
What do you mean no two fields are the same? I mean, they all have the...
No, the infields are the same, but outfield in Fenway Park is different, and Yankee Stadium is different, and Dodger Stadium...
But the parameter is the same.
The parameters in the infield are the same, in the outfield are not.
I didn't know that.
One outfield could be 300 feet to right field, one could be 400.
I did not know that.
Okay. Baseball's an unusual game. There's so many facets to it. And it gets into your skin. And if you grow up, and you grow up in a town where baseball, and in Brooklyn, growing up in Brooklyn, baseball was part of the fabric of your life. I was at Jackie Robinson's first game. I interviewed him later in life. And Brooklyn, that team was part of you. And when they left, I left the same year. I went to Miami.
Wow.
To break into radio, and they went to L.A. But I used to say, you can take me out of Brooklyn, but you can't take Brooklyn out of me. And then 22 years ago, I moved to L.A., reaffirmed my love with the Dodgers. I have two beautiful sons, both of whom are baseball players, who grew up at Dodger Stadium.
Wow.
And they're both gone tonight.
Yeah.
And they're infused with the same thing, that same, the pitcher and the catcher.
Is it the simplicity?
You want to see a movie called Field of Dreams.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Is the simplicity and the complexity. Baseball is athletic chess. It has no time limit. If I'm going to a baseball game, I don't know when I'll be home.
Hmm.
There's no time limit. It's innings. Baseball game could take 3-4 hours or 2.5 hours. Who knows? It's just a wonderful... if you're not a fan, you can't become a fan when you're an adult. It's too complex.
Yeah, interesting. Have you been to the Negro Hall... what was it called?
The Negro Hall of Fame in Kansas City. Yeah.
I've been there. And that is a fascinating museum.
Yeah, it is.
Talking about when they had the Negro Leagues, and they would travel by bus in these shitty accommodations.
When we were kids, we had no prejudice. I never used the N-word. I didn't. And we did not understand why there were no black players.
Yeah.
We knew about the Negro Leagues. We mm-hmm. knew about the great players of the Negro Leagues. Why? And so all my life I was raised with this simple fact, in fact, a question I've never gotten the answer to. Why does the pigment of a skin matter? Why does it matter?
Yeah.
What does it have to do with anything? Why would you spend your life hating someone?
It's taught. I mean,
yeah,
people aren't born that way.
If you're taught stupidity... when you get an education, wouldn't an education tell you that this is stupid?
But a lot of racists aren't educated.
I know, but if you go through high school, you should be. Come on.
Yeah, I know. Open your eyes. What do you have to feel?
Lenny Bruce used to say, man has to, you have to feel better than something else. You have to feel better. And Lenny said something to me once, someday... when they get equality, blacks and whites are totally equal. They're going to have together have something to hate. You know who they're going to hate? Eskimos. Get us goddamn Eskimos. You got a problem in the world, the Eskimo caused it. Yeah, don't let an Eskimo come near you, because they got to hate something. And then the Eskimos will hate someone.
Yeah.
You know who the Eskimos will hate?
Who?
Midgets.
Oh, gosh.
Midgets! We got to have a... You got to be carefully taught.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really an overwhelming issue that is so confusing to me.
Economically stupid. Let's take the South.
Yeah.
The South of the United States. They had to build schools far away from this school so that black kids couldn't go to school with white kids. They had to build two bathrooms when all you needed was one.
Right.
Two water fountains when all you needed was economically stupid.
Hey, did you ever meet Fred Rogers?
Of course. Interviewed him 3-4 times.
Oh, no kidding. Because I just saw his movie.
I hear it's terrific.
It's so terrific. And he does this thing about, it was in the early 70s, and they had been kicking black people out of swimming pools, public swimming pools. And so Fred Rogers did this episode where he was soaking his feet in a small tub of water, and he invited his friend, who happened to be, you know, African-American, to sit and soak his feet in the tub, you know, to try to teach, you know, that we've got to come together.
You know, when
this
Sammy
fear,
Davis...
The fear is baseless.
When Sammy Davis worked in Vegas, if he swam in the pool, they would empty the pool and put in new water.
That's not true.
It is crazy. True. Sammy told me.
Wow.
Why?
And you loved him, right?
I loved him. Sammy was great.
An amazing talent.
Amazing talent.
Yeah.
Anyway, Caroline, I tell you what.
Christine.
Why did I call you Caroline? Because of Caroline's nightclub.
Oh, okay, I'll take that.
That's a comedy club here
yes,
in L.A.
In New York.
Yeah, and you get nice singers there.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Christine, are you Christian?
No, I'm agnostic. I don't...
What were you born?
I was born... I was brought up Catholic, and a lot of guilt, you know, and I had to go to church till I was about 15, and then...
Jews invented Catholics.
Yeah.
We gave you your leader.
I love Jewish people because of how funny Jewish people seem to be,
they're
how
funny.
Smart... And how they seem to always be a step ahead. At least here in Hollywood, so many of my friends are Jewish, and everybody is just incredibly bright.
There's dumb Jews. The Jewish sense of humor is intrinsic. I think, you know, there was humor, a sense of humor in concentration camps.
Yeah.
There were comedians.
Do you remember the movie A Beautiful Life?
Of course.
Yeah, and that was lovely. That was he played a clown, as it were.
Anyway, whenever you want me back, I'll come back.
Larry, you were so funny on Story Smash. And actually, folks, that episode is up next week. Larry King.
It hasn't been up yet?
No, it's going to be up July 23rd. And it's along with actress Wendy McClendon Covey, and also writer, executive producer of Modern Family, Danny Zucker. And you three made such an amazing panel of judges. And Larry, you knocked it out of the park. I mean, people were just howling with laughter. You were so funny. You were right in the moment. And that's like part of your greatness is being in the moment.
It goes up the 23rd.
Yes.
I go up the 23rd.
Well, this episode, what we're talking right now, goes up on the 16th, celebrating the 8th anniversary.
It goes ahead of that.
And it's after that, yeah.
So I did that before this, but
that's
this
right.
goes before that.
It's so complicated, isn't it?
It is. Well, it's a complicated business.
It is, and I'm doing my best, you know? And you, seriously, sir, you have given me so much inspiration over the years, and I really appreciate your time.
I'll leave you with a joke.
Okay, great.
This couple has a baby, and all they got was a head. Just a head. And the doctor says, in all my years in medicine, I've never seen this. No body, just a head. Take your head home, and we'll work on this. 6 years later, they get a call from the hospital. We have found a body. For your head, bring your head in tomorrow, and we'll do the attachments. They get so excited. They run up to the bedroom. They pick up the head, and they say, "Head, we have such a surprise for you." And the head says, "Not another hat."
That is terrific. That's a great joke. Thank you for leaving
Thank
me with
you,
that.
Thank you, Caroline.
Larry King. Hey, listen, you guys, thank you so much for listening today.
Thank you, Christine.
Really appreciate it. And I want to thank all the sponsors on the show today. Really,
thank
you guys.
Thank you, Whoopi Parker.
When you guys check out my sponsors, then they in turn pay me. And that's how this whole thing goes around. And
thank you, Whoopi.
Appreciate it. And I want to thank everybody over there at Wondery Media, including Arnon Lopez and the entire Wondery team. And on behalf of the talented and fantastic Larry King, thank you so much, sir. Really.
Thank you, Phil.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a story-worthy week.
Thank you, Whoopi.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.